21 years. I'm also, now that my kids are grown up, I'm a private tutor, and I tutor math, modern math, and I tutor Euclid, which is classical math, which we'll talk about.
Which is above my head, just so you know.
Only because you haven't sat for 5 minutes with it. Anyone can do it. And I also, I private tutor in the classics, every subject for children 14 and under. And then my daughters who work with me, they private tutor in the great books for teens 15 through 18. And so that's what we do. We also have Spanish immersion tutors and Latin tutors, and soon to have Greek and Hebrew tutors. So anyway, if you need any private tutoring for your kids, our booth is just right around the corner, the first one when you walk in. But I want to talk to you today about Euclid and why it's so important for training kids to think, why it's so important for math, and why it's so important in general for education, a statesmanship education. Okay, so let's first talk about who Euclid is. Euclid is known as the father of geometry. He lived about 300 years ago in ancient Greece, and his book, which is called Elements. He has 13 books of Elements. It's not certain that it's certain that he did not come up with all of that, but he is the first to compile something like that we know of. We have bits and pieces of old mathematical things, but it's the first comprehensive textbook that we know of on the earth. So that's kind of cool. But it contains in it all of the principles and the theorems and propositions that make up the study of modern geometry. The principles we apply to triangles and squares and circles today for architecture, landscaping, everything else, all of those are contained in Euclid. It's showing how they were discovered and proven, and it's the original works. So let me give you a quick example. So most people who've done a little math know what the Pythagorean theorem is. Right? It's how you solve for the hypotenuse of a right triangle. So a squared plus b squared equals c squared, right? And that's very, very useful in modern life. So if you're taking a modern geometry class, you would accept that rule at face value, don't question the rule, and you would use it to solve for the third side of the triangle. In Euclid, we get to see why that is true, why we should all trust it and use it. That's really cool. It brings a lot of context to math. And anyway, we're going to go into that in a minute. So that's the difference. Euclid does not even have numbers in it. It's all words. It's long sentences and paragraphs that are difficult to understand at first. But I take 12-year-olds through it every day, and we break it down, and they grow into it really, really quickly. Okay, so why was it studied historically? Historically, Euclid was like a prerequisite to higher education. In fact, over the doorway of Plato's School of Philosophy in Athens was a sign that said, "Let no man enter who has not a sound understanding of geometry." And when I first heard that, and when most people hear that in modern times, we think, that's weird. A school of philosophy, why did they care so much about geometry? I would think that would be the sign over the doorway of a school of STEM. Right? Make sure you get your math basics before you come to STEM college. But no, he didn't want anyone coming through the doorway if they didn't have a sound understanding of Euclid. And as I looked further into this, I discovered that Euclid, ancient geometry, was known as the language of philosophy. Again, I thought, weird, why? And what I discovered is, in philosophy, you go there to argue very important political and philosophical ideas, right? To convince others and be convinced of truths, important truths that actually apply to our lives beyond triangles and circles. And there's no reason to go there and start arguing very important things when you don't know how to argue on lines of logic. As humans, we often, without meaning to, we inadvertently argue on flimsy foundations, right? We argue on emotion. We argue on bias. We oversimplify. We generalize things that shouldn't be generalized. But Euclid is how you train your mind for precision and precision in articulation, and especially the ability to recognize and call out error to put it into words. So you see what a leadership quality that is? That's very, very, very important. Okay. Let's see. So if you have something true that you are passionate about, and you want to share it with others, right? And or you want to be effective in a leadership position, or you would like to help sway masses to see a higher truth, if you follow the light and truth that you have been given on this earth so far, in as far as you know it, and you live up to, you choose what is right, the best that you can, your moral compass is going to work for you, right? You're going to feel icky when you hear bad things, and you're going to feel attracted to good things. And the more and more you choose good, the more it's going to work. That's how it works. But just because you may have a student who's as morally good as gold and feels yucky by this off-putting philosophy, that doesn't mean that they have the ability to call out exactly what the error was and to articulate in an eloquent way that could convince masses to see a higher truth. That's where education comes in. Right? And we know, like, the education of the heart is the most important. You can have someone with no education who has decided to live a life of humility and reverence and goodness, and they're going to be happy in life, right? But education is where we are now equipped with the abilities we didn't have before, so that we can serve mankind in a powerful way. Because that person's voice is probably not going to be heard. And so that's the point of your book. So... okay, let me tell you a little more about it. So really, although it is geometry, what it consists of and its value in the leadership education is that it's a comprehensive study of logic. Okay, and I'll explain why that happens when you're just working with triangles and circles. Like I said, there are no numbers in it. It's all words and drawings. And the point is to verify the validity of the arguments, so that you see why the rules are the rules. It makes geometry fun. It makes geometry easy. But it's that power to follow an argument and then to be able to see what happens when an argument is based on a false premise. You get to see things crumble. And you get to see arguments develop that are based on a true premise. And that's really, really valuable. Because then you need to go do that as you learn to philosophize over more important things. Okay. So, learning that skill that I'm talking about on triangles and circles, that's a really safe place to learn it. It's a safe medium, because we don't really care in the end when we go home, like, about the triangles very much. But if you were to go and, you know, try to bring something that's special to you, maybe your life's work, maybe your God-given gifts and talents, and try to go present them in some way, and you sound sloppy, you could not only make a fool of yourself, but you may invalidate the truth of what you're saying to the listeners. Okay, and so that could be hurtful. It could make your presentation very ineffective. And so that's why you learn this in a safe place. We laugh all the time. A student will say, okay, are those lines equal? And the student will say, yeah. And I'll say, why are they? And they look equal. Okay, we can't go on the looks. And we also can't measure them. Is there a rule or something that we've already agreed upon that can be used to show through plain reason that those are equal? And that's hard. They get stuck all the time. They get into corners and then we laugh. They'll start to define a thing by that thing itself. And it's hard not to do that. It's like asking someone to describe what salty tastes like without using the word salt or salty or saltiness or savory. You know, you can't define something by itself. And it's hard, it's messy. So we want to make that mess on something safe and easy, like parallelograms. In the end, we have a good laugh, nobody cares, and they come back and they're better at it the next day. Okay, here are some benefits that I see in Euclid. It's a real arming against sophistry, rhetoric, smooth-tongued politicians that do know their logic and think they're talking to a crowd that doesn't, right? Then they can choose they can choose which emotion they want to appeal to in you, right? And they can present something in a way that may convince people to vote themselves right out of their freedom. And so we want our students, we want a generation of people who can see through that. As good as they are, they also need to be armed with power.
And that's the benefit we're seeing in Euclid. Now, here's another benefit. It brings so much context to math in general. It's really fun when I have students who take our classical math path, which I'll talk about in a minute, reading the original writings of, the original writings of, like, the ancient mathematicians, and reading them in their order. Students who do that, and then also take my modern math at the same time, they don't immediately see the connection. But over a couple of years, they start seeing between the lines. They start seeing deeper meaning in the math, things that seemed abstract and a little bit disconnected, like why are we doing these equations in math? They're starting to see when they get to book two of Euclid. And anyway, it's a really special thing if you're willing to invest a lot of time and resources into math for your children to let them do both paths. It's a beautiful thing to have those two come together. Okay, I said it does make geometry easier. I remember when my son was 15 and he was taking modern geometry, and I said, hey, how do you like your geometry class? And he said, oh, it's good. He said, it's kind of like Euclid, except it's easy. And I thought, that's awesome. That's not what most 15-year-olds say about geometry, that it's easy. And he said, I actually already know how to do all the problems. So that's kind of cool. He understood them on a much deeper level than just, hey, here are the rules, memorize them, and use them to get right answers. Do you see? And I say that with caution because we're huge fans of modern math. We teach both, and we think that it's important for both of them to work together, side by side. Okay, let's see. Okay, I want to give you an example of how it helps students develop the power of articulation. So it's easy, it's easy for all humans, especially kids growing up, especially young students. It's easy to not be careful with your wording. It's easy to just kind of spit something out and get by. And that doesn't work in any degree in Euclid. So a student will say something like okay, the proposition 3 in Euclid, it says, this is the title, it says, to cut from a greater line a line equal to a lesser line. Okay, and that's strangely worded. In our day, we would say, take the large line and cut a piece off of it that's the same size as the small line. But he says, to cut from a larger line a line equal to a smaller line. And that's just a little bit tricky for a 12-year-old to navigate. Like, wait, what? Cut from what? What? And they have to figure out, which one are we cutting from? And which one are we cutting? And which one is it going to be equal to? And we talk about it. I say, and at first when some of the students read it, they're a little cross-eyed. And I say, okay, hold on. What if I were to say to you, to the mailbox, take this box of clothes for the neighbors. That's a little choppy. Nobody's going to say that in our modern times. But what is it you're taking? Where are you taking it to? And who is it for? Because we would just say, take this box of clothes for the neighbors instead of like mailbox. But to the mailbox, take the box of clothes for the neighbors. That's just what Euclid's doing. With that in mind, now go read the title again. And then they can kind of piece it together. Okay, and you may be thinking, like, why on earth does anyone care? But it is the power to be able to break down difficult text, to process it, to decide what it means, and then to be certain, to be sure of themselves. That's a really important skill if they're going to read Plato and Aristotle someday, right? They're going to have a statesmanship education, a leadership education, which is a very popular term in the homeschool world. Classical education, leadership education. Those are beautiful, beautiful ideals to shoot for, but the reality of it is those works are dense. And most 14 or 15-year-olds are not going to crack those books and would not have the ability to understand them, which is one of those books, is like it's the prerequisite. It's how you prepare for it. I know of no other study that a young teen can do to prepare for a hefty, serious scholar program than to do Euclid, because their brain grows up in just a few months, and it's really special to see. Okay, a couple more benefits. Students can really develop their power of attention. If they don't have a habit of attention, they'll get one from Euclid, because it's really hard, and you only do, a few inches of text a day at first. and they work over 3 months to be able to do about a whole page a day. But you have to pay attention. And it's also very intriguing. When they start, they think they know how to define what a point is. But when they get started, they realize they can't do it without saying point or dot or period or something. And that's intriguing to them. Like, why am I so stumped on defining what a dot is? You know, that kind of sucks them in. It's all very interesting, but it is difficult. It's not boring, but it's difficult. So they learn to pay attention. Power of concentration. You can't kind of do Euclid. You're gonna you suck in, and then you got to come back out to the real world, or you're not gonna get it. You can't like multitask. You can't do it in a room of noisy children. You're either in or you're out. So they're going to develop some new power of concentration if they don't have that. And like I said, there is nothing I know of on the face of the earth to train reading comprehension for difficult text than Euclid. I have a student who has such severe dyslexia. I started with him a year and a half ago. He was 14. And his mom said, I don't know if he can do Euclid. We were also doing classics. So we're reading other books that were more on his level. And I said, well, let's try it. Because in my experience with my own son, who has severe dyslexia, Euclid was the therapy that pulled him out of it. As soon as he did his first summer of Euclid, he could start reading chapter books on his own. And before that, like he was, like any other dyslexic 12-year-old, like stumbling over every word, mixing things up, just going slowly. And he'd been to plenty of like dyslexia therapy and everything. But Euclid, I felt like, was that brain therapy that he needed for his reading. Okay, so I started with this student, and it was so slow. It was the slowest Euclid I'd ever done, this 14-year-old. And I wondered, like, should we keep pushing, or should I think, like, this isn't quite for him? But I kind of had my own little testimony of it from doing with my son, so I thought, let's try it. And pushed through. What I noticed in the first couple of months is his reading skill. He was now not racing across the words, which is a big part of dyslexia. A lot of the dyslexia therapy is you're like training your eyes to slow down and focus on things. And that was just happening naturally with Euclid. He couldn't get anything out of it if he didn't take every word seriously. And so it taught him, it trained him to slow down and pay attention. And his reading ability increased over just a few months. Now, a year and a half later, he is my very best Euclid student. The best I've ever taught, besides teaching my own children, and so that's really cool. He's a master of how to navigate these propositions, and he's 15 years old. So that's really encouraging for reading comprehension. Okay, let's see. It's also like a power tool to, like I said, to prep students for a scholar program. So if you have a student that maybe you started a little bit late in being really serious about their education, or maybe they fell through the cracks just a little bit in one way or another. A lot of kids with ADHD, dyslexia, processing delays, sometimes their parents want to put them on an entrepreneur path or something. They're like, they just weren't cut out for school sort of mentality. We have seen Euclid transform children to be able to do PEPD scholar programs. So that's why I'm so passionate about it. Okay, so with all those amazing benefits, here's what I think is the most powerful benefit, the most important, is that a study of Euclid is the best thing that I know of to start training students how to think. You hear a lot in leadership education about why it's so important to learn how to think, not just what to think. Rather than just being these parents that are told what to do, and we do it perfectly, we get an A, let's learn how to start thinking deeper so that we can be proactive adults in our democratic republic. Let's be thinking citizens that aren't just moved around, you know, by the people in charge. That's important to us. Euclid does this in the most powerful way that more powerful than anything that I've ever seen. And here's why. In Euclid, we're always asking why. It's not like, did I get the answer right? When kids are trained to get the answer right in math, which is also important, they learn to like just memorize procedures and not think. Just blah, 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 plug in the formula, blah, I got the right answer, check, dopamine drip, right? That's how math goes. when you're doing Euclid, there's not a right answer that you're looking for. Euclid already has the answer. These are truths that we've been using to build buildings and, you know, all the astronomy, everything that we do in math and physics. Like, we already know these things are true. We're there so that we can see why they're true, and so that we can have the power to lay out arguments in the way he does, because he's a master. He leaves like no T's uncrossed and no I's without dots. Okay, so let's see. In modern math, we see an equation or a problem, and we immediately think, when I see this, what should I think? Oliver DeMille called it what to think, when to think, and how to think. Okay, so you can be taught what to think in math. You can also be taught when to think. When I see this, what should I think? Oh, I should think quadratic equation. When I see this, I should think, oh, complete the square. When I see this, I should think cross multiply. It's like you're getting trained, like, when you see this, do that, right? Also very useful. In Euclid, we are being asked, why is this true? Why does this rule work? How could you draw that conclusion? Do you see how there's no way out of the thinking in that setting? Nobody can scan their brain for a quick answer. You actually have to think and back up what you're going to say. Let's see. Think of this. They're learning patterns of, why is this rule being used? Is there a better way to do it? Is this the only way that could work? I've had students say, if I see a way to prove this differently than Euclid did, could I try that? And I'm thinking, that's amazing, because this is from 300 BC, and we've been relying on it for millennia, and you think you see a better way to prove it. That's amazing. Like, absolutely, by all means, go try it. The fact that he even said that was astounding to me. That shows that he's thinking. Think about this in our world. Instead of always trying to decide how to solve this problem, how to do it, how do we do this, we need leaders who will say, should we be doing that? Right? Should we be doing this? Not just how to clone. Should we be cloning? Not just how to perform a C-section. What a precise medical student. He performs the best C-section. Should we? Are we leading people to a path of C-sections? We need people to think outside the box. And that is why Euclid's so valuable to leadership education. Okay, so we say that we need modern math and we need classical math. We need both. And people always ask me, you know, if I really want to take math seriously for my family and I can't afford both, which one is the most important? And I have such a difficult time answering. I've never been able to answer it. You know, if you're going for just prepping for a scholar program and you want help with your reading comprehension, hands down, Euclid is the most important thing you could do. But these people are talking about math. They want to know, for my kids' math education, should I do modern math or classical math class? Because they're very different. You need to have two different classes going, and you sort of put them together over time in your mind. So here's my thought on it. We want our architecture to hold up. We want our landscaping to be sound. We want the people who are, navigating us in our airplane across the world to be doing that with precision. We want that precision in thinking. We want equations to be solved accurately. So we appreciate the way modern math gives us the practice in accomplishing that. That's really, really important. And if modern math is taught, this is what I've discovered being a private math tutor for 5 years, if modern math is taught in a way that is connecting to the kids, not through a book, but through the mentor, this is very Charlotte Mason, the mentor being so expert in what they're teaching that it's a part of them, that they are able to connect with the kid one-on-one through normal, down-to-earth language, then the student learns it that fast. And I found there's not one concept in modern math that is actually difficult to understand, even to kids with disabilities, even kids who hate math, even kids who thought they couldn't do math. It's simply that it is delivered in an absolute psychotic way most of the time. It is delivered in a mixed up way, And on a time schedule, this stops the kids from getting good at one skill before they move on to the other. And so, you know, the 7 or 8 years it takes in the public school system to go from the beginning of arithmetic in, say, kindergarten, up through all of arithmetic and pre-algebra, so you're ready to start algebra. That's across the board pretty standard for public school, also very high quality private schools. You're usually starting algebra around 7th, 8th grade at Hope Schools as well, if you're following the curriculum. But we have found in our modern math that we can take an 8-year-old through all of that 7 or 8-year program in 1 to 2 years by rearranging how it's done. And then they know it really well. And this is not a modern math seminar, but I'm just going to tell you a couple of bullet points while I'm talking about it. We connect with them one-on-one. We do not ever move on until they have perfectly mastered one concept. And we cater all the assignments to exactly their weakness. So they don't even know they have a weakness. The kids who take math from me, they don't know they have a weakness. I see from their assignment, okay, it's the decimal division that's tripping them up. Let's just do a whole assignment on decimal division, and we'll talk all about it today. And all they know is, we went into depth on decimal division. Now I'm great at it, right? And then I move on to the next thing. And so so anyway, we're huge fans of modern math. Yes?
When you say 1 to 2 years,
yeah.
What level are you attaining in 1 to 2 years as far as, like, a public school system goes? Are you going to, like, an algebra 2? Are you going to...
For an 8-year-old to start at the very beginning of math, mm-hmm. let's say they don't even know how to add,
okay.
All the way until they're ready to open Sacks and Algebra number 1. So Algebra 1.
Oh, so that period of time.
That period of time, which takes 7 or 8 years to get to Algebra, takes mm-hmm. 1 to 2 years.
And yeah. then do you segregate the remaining different math courses after that, or do you still teach those in kind of a... Like, as because in more like in a school system, you would walk through algebra 1 and then geometry, then algebra 2 and trig, and then calculus. Do you still walk through those types of things, or do you even teach them more like fully together?
Well, you have to only teach one thing at a time. Mm-hmm. I don't really know the others.
Right.
So we just teach one at a time. But we're taking that entire holistic view that we do in arithmetic, where we just teach out of our own brain.
Yeah.
Basically, we're taking that into account as we teach the algebra. So I don't teach from the book. Mm-hmm. I glance at it and I go, oh, we're on distributive property today. Mm-hmm. Let me talk like a normal human to my student. Mm-hmm. And then we talk about it and then they get it. Yeah. But yes, we definitely do algebra 1 before algebra 2. Mm-hmm. Our geometry is in it a bit. I prefer to do geometry through Euclid.
Through Euclid.
But the geometry is in there, and then comes our trig and our calculus.
Okay.
Okay. So
do you still do Euclid through all of those, or is Euclid, you said like after 2 months the kids are kind of going through that. How long is the Euclid training, or do you do it consistent?
Oh, okay. Let me share how to map it out in a bit, but just okay. So you know, it's two separate math paths, two totally separate. Yeah, and Euclid takes like 2 to 3 years.
Okay.
Two if you go summers, 3.
Gotcha.
For the amount that we're doing. Okay, so we're huge math fans. And we think that precision in thinking and ability to solve and calculate is very, very important. But if that's all you do, then your brain is trained, and I see this all the time with brand new seasoned math whiz kids that sign up. If they're good at math, it's hard for them to get into their Euclid, because in Euclid, we don't want you to scan your brain for the right formula and answer. We don't want you to give a quick thing so I can check the box. We want you to stop. Be still, read what he's saying, and tell me what you think about it. And those two things are very, very important. So I think we do a disservice to our kids if we only give them modern math. The math is great, but the detriment is in how are they learning how to think. They're not learning how to think in a leadership sort of way. They're being given equations that were prepared and prepackaged. Here is the problem. Here's how you solve it, now go. That's not leadership, right? That's not healthy. But we also need it, so let's balance it with classical math and science. Okay, let's see. Okay, now, I want to tell you what I saw when I started teaching this to my kids. I started at age 12, that's what I learned. Around age 12 is the earliest you want to start. I found a mentor who knew Euclid to teach me, and for 3 years, for about an hour, 4 days a week, I did Euclid. And then when each child would come of age, I was far enough ahead that I could start teaching them. And what I noticed 3 to 6 months in is that their brain grew up. I was used to meeting with my kids every day for half an hour each one, doing what we called a little interview, where they would narrate to me all the stuff they'd read and talk about it. I would guide them, you know, with corrections in their grammar and punctuation on their written narrations, and kind of hear about how their Latin went and other things that I wasn't teaching them. So I was very used to how they talk. And 3 to 6 months in, they start to sound like adults, educated adults. And I would also notice that when they give a talk at church or something, like, wow, that's not how the 12-year-olds usually speak. And this was really special to me because I have 6 kids. I started all of them. And as I got too many kids coming of age, I would hire my math mentor or my Euclid mentor to teach the other ones, the higher levels of Euclid. But since I got to be the one to start them all, I got to see this in every single one of them. And then I spoke with my good friend who was doing the same thing. My Euclid mentor was the mentor of her children as well. And she said, I wish I could peer into the minds of my kids and see in their brain what changes when they do Euclid. She said, nothing else we've ever done in our homeschool has like caused them to grow up intellectually in so short a time. And she said the same thing, 3 to 6 months in, their brain grew up. So that's really cool. And I see it happening with my students all the time. Okay, now I want to talk to you about classical math. Euclid is considered classical math. It's an original source classic written by the original mathematicians. And I already told you how it applies to like train you how to think and why it's so valuable in a leadership education. But there's more to classical math than just Euclid. Euclid is the first book. It's like the ABCs of math, okay? But there are two major, or there's another major reason to study it, and that is it's the beginning of math and science. So after that, you can read Archimedes. Okay, and you can read all the original mathematicians and scientists up through Newton and Einstein. This is what I had my kids do. They had a modern math path and a classical math path. And the privilege that it was for them to read those original works, I cannot put into words. As much as I'm talking about articulation, I cannot put into words what a value that was to their lives. Math and science are so important. And something that I learned is that in the original writings, philosophy, religion, and God were in those writings. I had no idea. I've been a math nerd my entire life. And I had no idea until I was 35. And after studying Euclid, I went on to Nicomachus. And I read Introduction to Arithmetic under the direction of my mentor. And I was astounded to see principles and truths I had learned in my religion, a religion that was not even known in ancient Greece, right, were showing up in the numbers. And he was not concluding this for me, but I could tell that he also knew this, and he laid it out for people to discover. God is in the numbers. And the people who decided how our math would be delivered in modern times in our country were atheists. And they intentionally wanted God out of the math and science. That was the goal. Let's get all this funny mythology stuff out and just get to the point of the math. What has been the result of that? Kids hate math. Everybody hates it. You know, a few select math nerds like myself, everybody else hates it. And they think it's hard. They think they can't do it. They have huge emotional blocks, right? But you go read the original works. And not only is God manifest in the numbers and the discoveries, but those people he chose to lead the way, they're very special people. And they testify of him all throughout. And we've had some very, very special experiences. Let me see how much time I have. If I have time to share one. Okay.
2 minutes.
2 minutes. Okay. Okay, I do. Okay, so... my daughters teach with me. We have 26 private tutors that teach under us. And one of the things that one of my daughters told me over the last couple of years, these two stories. So she had a student who was struggling. His family had been through some major family crises, and he was very much a struggling teen, and they're reading Kepler, who is one of the scientists that come later, 1500s, and reading his original works, and he's mentioning stuff about God and his majesty and all this stuff in his science book, right? And this is a very respected scientist. This is Johannes Kepler, who led the way before Isaac Newton and prepared the way for the accurate mapping of the solar system. And he's mentioning God. And that one thing alone was very touching to him. And he asked my daughter, like, a scientist is talking about God? Like, is there any, you know, logical evidence for God? He was struggling with this thing. And that led to many side conversations. They talked after class many, many times. And they wanted to know, he wants to know, how is this happening? Okay, and then another example I have from her as well. Another student this year, and we know this student very well because our kids grew up with him and knew his mother, but he has slipped through the cracks of education his entire life. He has some major learning disabilities that no experts can quite put their finger on and put a label to, right? But I've taught him myself many times. I've taught him math, and I've also taught him English, and he skims over stuff, partly out of anxiety, because learning doesn't work very well for him, and he doesn't have habits of going slowly, right, like the Zuko teaches, and he's looking for, like, a quick way out, and can I get the gist of this so I can answer questions? That's kind of how he did school when he was at these private schools, but his mother told me, because this year he took full time, he took all of the courses that we offer, Latin, math, he's taking classics 4 hours a week, and he said that she told me this is the first year of his life that he has ever enjoyed school. And when I visit with his mentors, I'm his math mentor, I visit with the other mentors who teach him, he's doing absolutely just excellent. And one of the things that came up, we figured he could not read these hefty college level books that we usually put our high school students through. It's a book set called The Great Books of the Western World. It's the full gamut of a Thomas Jefferson education. It's the education of Winston Churchill. We're giving these kids this from 15 to 18. You start with Homer and Plato, and you go through ancient Greece, Rome, Middle Ages, Dark Ages, up through modern times, all the state papers, Constitution, and we're reading the original source classics. So these are dense, heavy, 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 heavy books. And his mother said, let's just do younger classics with him, because he's not going to be able to read these great books. And I quite agreed. He's not going to be able to read these books. So he spent this year reading amazing, wonderful classics, but not these college-level super dense. And his mentor, who is my daughter, was just telling me this week that they cracked open Nicomachus, Introduction to Arithmetic. It's math, science, and philosophy. And as they're reading, number one, he's able to read it. They're breaking it down small. Able to read it. He's having all these epiphanies. He's so excited. He wants to call my son, who's his best friend, and tell him all about it. And he's telling this to my daughter. And we're just dying because we know this boy is a total jock. If he had his way, he would ski and mountain bike and play football all day long. He doesn't care a lick about education. And now he does. And he's so excited about Nicomachus, philosophy from ancient Greece, that he's got to call his 17-year-old best friend and just tell him all about it. So this classical math path is very special. We recommend students do modern math and classical math side by side for these very reasons. And in closing, I just wanted to give you a quick list of the order of the classical math books. If you wanted your kid to start in Euclid and go up through Newton and Einstein and read the original works, if you have people who have walked that path, who could be their mentor, that's the way you want to go with classical math. You don't wing it. We say, like, when we teach families, you can wing everything for the 14 and under. You can pick up Little House on the Prairie and read it and listen to a narration from your child, and you can ask really great thinking questions without having been mentored in it, right? But when it comes to classical math, it's hefty, it's serious. You need to have someone else calling out the validity of your arguments and training you in it. It took me 3 years, 4 hours a week of diligent study in Euclid to be able to do this. And that's how it was for my kids going through this. It was they had an hour a day of classical math, an hour a day of math. So that's a big, big commitment. Okay, so here is the list. Euclid is the beginning. Then it goes to Archimedes, then Nicomachus, Ptolemy, Copernicus, Kepler, Pascal, Newton, Einstein, and then there's a modern classic by Albert that's really cool. It's for kids who've done a lot of modern math already. Alfred North Whitehead. It's called, what is it called? Introduction to Mathematics. But it's very advanced, but it's so fun to read after they've gotten like through Algebra 2, because it kind of puts the whole story together and you get to sort of walk through history and see some patterns and things. But what was I going to say about that? Oh, I was just going to say that we have tutors trained to mentor in all these things if you have interest. So if you do, I'll just tell you my phone number right now, because my booth's right there. I don't know if you'll see it or if you're headed out, but you can text me if you want to ask questions on this, or if you want to buy any of our recordings. We have lots of little recorded videos that go into all subjects of classical education. We train parents how to do it in their homes, basically. And then we also provide private tutors if there are things you want to hire out. So my phone number is 208-312-3445. And you can just text me anytime and just tell me you have a question, we'll set up a call. Okay, thanks a lot.